Welcome to KUOW's Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this episode, since 1994, the Seattle Arts and Lectures Writers in the Schools program has reached over 100,000 Seattle-area public school students. WITS brings professional writers into classrooms to help student writers find their voices and hone their skills. Each year, the program reaches thousands of students in four school districts: Highline, Port Townsend, Seattle, and Shoreline, as well as at Seattle's Children's Hospital. The work they do, students and mentors, is palpable here. You will hear, at every turn, the wonder, respect, and possibility their process entailed. This culminating reading is nothing short of astounding. The 2017 Writers in the Schools year-end reading and celebration took place at the Seattle Public Library's Central Library on May 25th. Sonya Harris recorded the readings and the outpouring of heartfelt applause. We're presenting our broadcast version here. To listen to the full event, go to kuow.org/speakersforum.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. How are you? Thanks for being here. My name is Alicia Craven, and I have the immense honor to serve as the director of the Writers in the Schools program with Seattle Arts and Lectures, or WITS as we call it. This is the second night of our two-year end-of-year readings in celebration of all of you, the students and writers and teachers and families who have made up the WITS program this year. It's a very special night. It's a tradition of the WITS program, which started in 1994, and we bring youth poets and fiction writers and essayists all together to share their work and be published in a chapbook as well. And to give you a sense of the scale of what you were part of this year, since its founding, WITS has taught over 100,000 students. And in the 2016-17 school year, WITS worked with 27 public schools throughout the Puget Sound region and Seattle Children's Hospital, bringing creative writers directly to over 5,900 K-12 students. Additionally, visiting spotlight authors came to WITS schools to connect with another 1,500 students to further make the connections between the published authors of today and the most important voices of tomorrow. And I think there's a specific way in which art that you both consume and create at this time in your life takes hold and kind of imprints and stays with you for the rest of your life. So it's powerful to start to hear your story reflected back to you in new ways and have that recognition of shared experience, sometimes just through a resonant emotion or a mood. It kind of makes the world feel more connected and less lonely, and it makes you kind of perk up and think like, oh, me too. And that takes craft and effort to articulate the specific in a way that feels really universal. So the writing you did in your classroom with WITS throughout the year and by coming here this evening, you're not only shaping the narrative of your own story, but you're also giving language to people for theirs, both your classmates in the class and the audience tonight. Your writer saw you had this gift, and that's why they asked you specifically to be here. So without further ado, the moment we've all been waiting for, it's time for the magic. And to kick things off this evening, I want to welcome writer Matt Gano and his writer, Sequin Iris of the Center School. And Matt's second writer, Claudia Basile, could not be here this evening, but she's going to be sharing her poem through video. So we'll kick things off with that.
So I'm going to introduce Claudia, and we're going to watch her read her poem. Claudia Basile's work defines bravery and risk-taking. On the first day of class, I asked everyone why they were in our creative writing elective, and Claudia said something to the effect of, I love writing, but I'm not sure what I'm doing. I'd like to be more confident as a writer and more confident in speaking my truth. The best gift to receive as a teaching artist is the desire of your students to take on the art and dig into the work. Claudia has excavated her truth, found her strength, and held it up to the light of her courage. Her poem, Big, is a powerful example of a young writer coming into their own. Please help me welcome and honor Claudia Basile.
I've always hated going to the doctor's office. That cold smell that sings into your nostrils and claws at your tongue makes your mouth echo the taste of hand sanitizer and forgotten rubber gloves. I've never liked that whiteness, the way it burns your eyes and reminds you what you're there for. to know what's wrong with you. The scale has always told me what's wrong with me. Numbers speak louder than words. Numbers have always questioned why they can't pick me up, how heavy I am, and I always answer, I don't know, because I'm afraid that if I say it out loud, I'll hate myself. But I know that I don't need to say a word, because they're already making their own guesses. When I was younger, everyone told me that I had great self-confidence, and I always took it as a compliment. But when I got older, the pressure of my own strength pressed on my stomach, and I just got bigger and bigger, and sadder, and everyone still told me that I had great self-confidence, and eventually, I stopped taking it as a compliment. Because compliments set standards, and when you feel like you're failing, they start to sound like you're being praised for something you're not. One day in 7th grade, a boy told me that I could use more exercise, and when I went looking for that self-confidence, I'd found that I'd lost it in the layers of fat that covered my collarbones and spilled over my blue jeans. It was my biggest defeat, and I carried it in the fleshiness of my gut and the bruised purple of my stretch marks for a long time. I always used to measure the size of my stomach by how much of my feet I could see. Every time I looked down, I took another blow to my self-esteem. With every inch that I grew, I got a hold of a bigger bat and took a harder swing. And when it got to the point where I couldn't see my toes anymore, I didn't bother grabbing a weapon. I just wrapped my own hands around my throat and squeezed the rest of my worth out of me. I was the worst kind of masochist, the kind with their own sadist inside them. My Satan was number-shaped. Beating your own demons is hard. But when you feel their wire jaws around your neck, suffocating you with their stale smoke, you know that you have to pry their teeth away from your skin before they bleed you dry and leave you to rot in your own self-hatred. I have never worked harder to destroy that part of me. It is the biggest war that has ever raged in my mind. Sometimes my hands shake from because I've fought so long. My legs ache from running to the battlefield every day. The ground is stained with blood. I don't know whose it is anymore. It's easy to become tired of fighting. But when I look in the mirror, with my heart beating stronger and my blood pumping faster, I am proud of what I see. The pain becomes worth it. I still hate the doctor's office. The smell still tears at my nose and the white still stabs into my eyes. But now when I look down at the scale, I can see my feet. And I know how to step on the numbers and muffle their voices.
Sequin Iris is a constant reminder of what student leadership and care can look like in the classroom. Beyond being a talented actor and born natural when it comes to writing, her continuous output of support and positivity has been a crucial factor in the success of our classes, both first and second semester. Sequin is a poet at heart, even if she swears otherwise. I honor her tonight for her talent, but also for her kindness and for the lightness of her spirit and how it charges strength and confidence in those around her. Her instincts and wit are both sharp as they are lit. Her poem, 1000, shows not only her skills as a writer, but just how attuned she is to the human experience. Please help me welcome Sequin Iris.
"1000. Every funeral I've ever been to has played 1000 Years by Christina Perry. Through baby pictures, Halloween costumes, friends, selfies, crying, smiling, laughing, hours before, days before, weeks, years, hardly centuries. All in their late teens and early 20s, everyone becomes a kid again when they die. I was raised on death. When I was little, I learned to let people hurt more than me, to listen to someone else's heartbeat and bury my own. I've held so many parents. I met Desiree sagging and drooping in her coffin. Nobody warned me how inappropriate I'd feel looking at someone's body once they've gone. Like sneaking a candid they'll never see, how naked you look in all of your clothes, but none of your self-awareness. My house was a sanctuary for those left behind. My small kitchen floor was two parts tile and one part dad who was all parts hurting, screaming no into the ground as if it could reach Max's ears. But when it was quiet, it was still, as if the house was holding its breath. My teacher asked me why I was talking out so much in class. It was almost as if I was afraid I wouldn't get to finish my sentence. James's dad taught me how to balance an egg on salt and trick people. He liked magic tricks. And when his son got stabbed, he disappeared. I hugged him, and my arm slipped through. I didn't visit Pauline in the hospital. Instead, I went to San Francisco, and she died the first night I was there. At her memorial, we said all the things we loved about her, celebrated her life. I've learned that more people go to memorials than birthdays. Sometimes I see Micah's girlfriend on 3rd and Pike. On Facebook, she says she misses my family, but she doesn't recognize me when I walk past her, like she's partway stuck in the coma Micah escaped. Every day on my way to the 132 bus stop and every night on my way home, I walk past Selena's shrine in the alley between Cloverdale and Sullivan Street, where she got murdered, and leave a note for myself. I am 17. James was 18, Desiree was 19, Max was 21, Pauline was 23, Micah was 25, and Selena was 26. And I am 17. If you ask me, I could tell you how 17 years can feel like 1,000.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Matt, Claudia, and Sequin. Next, I would like to welcome Wits writer Aaron Counts and his writer Aiden Hammond of Nathan Hale High School.
What's up? In their poem, Lovable, Aiden Hammond asks us, who hasn't got something to adore? Well, current presidents notwithstanding, I guess. Truth is, we can all use this reminder from time to time. Loving yourself and finding beauty in others is a bold act of heroism we can all take part in. I love this poem. Aiden's bravery in writing it and the way they always speak their truth in their poetry, in class, and in the world. It's heroic, as is the poem, and I hope you adore it as much as I do. Aiden Hammond.
I used to pretend to have crushes on boys just because my friends did. But my friends just did it because their friends did. Turned out a whole lot of us were gay. Beauty is so easy to find in girls. Who hasn't got something to adore? Even crooked noses, messy hair, a personality that's never soft, nails to drag through skin. There's beauty in it all. My first crush was a best friend, sweet and creative. Tall and straight. Love now is lopsided in smile, sharp at the hips and curved in the spine. Things pass through my mind so easily. Words come out so wrong. Bitterness strips from my eyes and words. Loving others comes without trying. I've learned to love my body. I still need to stop hating my mind.
Thank you, Aaron and Aiden. Next, please welcome Wits writer Alex Gayo Brown with his writer Gada Hassan of Nathan Hale High School.
Hello, everybody. Gada and I were trying to figure out who's more nervous. I'm not quite sure. I'm pretty sure it's me. It's my great privilege tonight to introduce Gada Hassan, a freshman at Nathan Hale High School, to the stage. I had the pleasure of working with her and her classmates for a two-week intensive residency back in March and April, during which we studied many different kinds of poems, including the elegy, which honors someone or something who's passed away. Previously, Gada had been a diligent but quiet student, always writing furiously in her notebook whenever I gave a writing prompt. I was surprised then when, during the elegy assignment, she became so emotional she had to leave the classroom. I was at first concerned about her well-being, but I also thought, wow, she must have come up with something good. She did indeed come up with something good, which you will hear first in Gada's native language of Arabic, and then in her second language of English. The poem is an elegy for her grandfather who died last year in Baghdad. I didn't know this until yesterday, but Gada and her family came to the United States from Iraq about 6 years ago, which was also the last time that she saw her grandfather. The poet Robert Frost famously wrote, "No tears in the writer, no tears in the reader." There were certainly tears for the writer in this case, and tears for this reader too. Please welcome Gada.
Hello, my name is Gada, and this poem is called Elegy to My Grandpa. But first, I'm going to read it in Arabic. رثاء في جدي كل صباح أذهب إلى حديقتك وأتناول الأفطار معك حتى وإن كنت قد أفطرت قبلك. كل صباح تعد معي إلى المائة حتى يأتي باص المدرسة ليأخذني. ظاهرة كل يوم ترجعني من المدرسة مع قدرتي للعودة بالباص مع صديقتي. ظاهرة كل يوم تأخذني إلى المحل القريب طالبا مني شراء ما أريد. كل مرة أحصل فيها على درجة في الامتحان تهديني مالا وتخبرني كم أنت فخور بي. كل مرة أحزن فيها تأخذني معك نزرع الورود مع رغبتك بعد ما دخول أحد إلى حديقتك. ألوم نفسي لعدم وفائي بوعدي لك وأشعر بالذنب لرحيلك قبل قدومي لزيارتك. كل يوم أرى صورتك في خيالي وأتذكر كم كنت بي تبالي. كل مساء كنت تضعني في فراشي بعد أن تنام بين يديك عيوني. كل مساء كنت تقص علي حكايات قبل النوم ذكريات ليس بإمكاني أن أنساها. آسفة أن لم أتصل بك في كل وقت. آسفة أن كنت بعيدة عندما توفيت. ولكن شيئا قدرت أن أفعل عندي أن كتبت قصيدة رثاء فيك يا جدي. Now this is in English. Elegy to my grandpa. Every morning I would go to your garden and eat breakfast with you, even though I already ate at home. Every morning sitting in your garden, you would count with me to 100 until the school bus came to pick me up for school. Every afternoon you would pick me up after school, even though I could ride the bus with my friend. Every afternoon you would walk with me to a nearby store and tell me to buy any snack I want. Every time I get a high grade on a test, you would give me $5 and tell me how proud you are of me. Every time I felt upset, you would bring me to your flower garden and plant plants with you, even though it's the garden you don't usually like people going in. Every day I blame myself for promising you I'll see you soon and feel guilt because you left me before I could see you again. Every day I would see your picture in my mind and think of the times you picked me up when I fell down and cried. Every night I would remember the times when you carried me home to my bedroom after I slept on your lap. Every night I remember the stories you used to tell me and keep safe that warm, unforgettable memory. So I'm sorry I didn't call you every day. I'm sorry I was away when you passed away. But Grandpa, there's something I could do. And so I wrote this poem to honor you. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex and Gada. Next, we have witch writer Cody Farigo and his writer Rochelle Kawaka of Nathan Hale High School.
Good evening. Rochelle Kawaka started writing during the eighth grade while waiting for an evening bus, using the stretched and ambling moments to compose short poems and vignettes. She continued writing more intensely in a ninth grade poetry unit and had her first major performance the following year at an MLK assembly. Rochelle's poems are thoughtful and grounded, steeped in a delightful play with sound and use surprising images that allow a message to meet us in multiple dimensions. Her work exudes the patience and curiosity one might want while traveling. Her favorite word is serenity. Please help me welcome Rochelle.
self-love. Ladies, don't let what other people say about your melanin bring you down. Or they out there saying that y'all are way too loud, or trying to say that you can't rock your curls loud and proud. This is often what I say to encourage myself. I'm a kinky-haired, brown-skinned African-American woman. I'm made of brown sugar, cocoa, honey, yeah, I'm golden. I'm dipped in chocolate, bronzed in elegance, and enameled with grace. Toasted in beauty, a bold statement in every step that I take. As I sway my hips, a unique melody plays, because I know who I am, I'm not just another colored face. I am an African queen embracing my black beauty, and I refuse to have my self-esteem damaged, I'ma do me. I will never let my identity be disrespected by someone who doesn't know my worth. Hopefully what I said has some value to you and you can put it to work.
Thank you, Cody and Rochelle. Next, please welcome Corinne Manning and her writer, Simon Keon of Roosevelt High School.
Last week, while we were practicing, I had Simon write down some final notes, and I told him, write down you are a being in a body. I emphasized that word being now, because in that moment, my Jersey accent came out, and Simon wrote down, I am a being in a body. The magic of Simon's poetry is the way he plays with language, explodes metaphors, turns images into something new. When our language limits the complexity of our identities, when we have more nouns than verbs, what else are poets to do? As we listen today, I'd like all of you to know or remember that you are sacred beings and bodies. And though we can't see it right now, or we won't be able to see it tonight, the moon is overhead. Simon has the moon guiding him, and let him hold it up to you now as he reads his poem, modeled after the poet Anastasia Renee. Welcome, Simon.
All you ever wanted was a Simon to hold. Why do you always have to be there for your little sister? Why did you get yourself into this? Don't you dare be transgender. Don't you dare get yourself hurt because you care. Don't you dare get your share of negativity. Don't you dare stand up. When you get yelled at, you sit there, frozen. It's okay. You're used to it. It's okay. They're bluffing. It's okay. You're gonna be all right. When your sister cries, you hold her and comfort her like it's the end. Why? The older you get, the closer you get to her. You understand everything. Now you know what you're good at. Your life, being a mystery. What's gonna happen now? No one knows. No one cares. It's just you. All you feel is dryness on your fingers. Dryness everywhere. You're adopted. You're a boy. You're a son, brother, and a person. At least you got sisters to look out for.
Thank you, Corinne and Simon. Next, please welcome Wits writer Damon Arundel with his writers Tessa Elizabeth Hill, Devin Harris, and Maria Hernandez of Southlake High School, Jolani Walling-Craig of Broadview-Thompson K-8 School, and Damon will be reading on behalf of his student Ella Smith and Denzel Holliman.
Good evening. Let's try that again. Good evening.
Good evening.
Oh, much better. All of my students are being introduced with a theme of superheroes. Tessa is no nonsense and has no alter ego because she doesn't need one. She is her superpower and it is her. If I had to sign it a name, it would be Poker Face. Tessa would walk into class, sit down, then get into a staring contest with the writing prompt, giving it a head nod eventually, and then saying, okay, I got this. And then her head would go down until the poem was done. And this is the result of one of those sessions.
All right, my poem is called My Future Husband. Here is what you need to know about my future husband. He'll understand me even when I don't understand myself. His personality will be a reflection of everything my father wished he could have been and everything my mother wanted. He'll represent me as an individual person capable of making decisions for myself. His smile will be a symbol of everything beautiful seen from children's eyes, like dancing fireflies or gazing at stars in the night. My future husband will find success in me by any means necessary. He'll keep it clean and contemporary, as if classic wasn't what he had already envisioned. My future husband will be stricken by visions of wisdom more than riches. He'll refer to women as women instead of as witches. His tender touch and taste for trust will overcome when others try to lust, for he is my future husband, and these qualities are a must. Thank you.
Next up is Devin. Devin always reminded me of the supervillain in the comics and the movies. Not because he was a bad guy, but because they always get to monologuing and explaining about how brilliant they are and how foolproof their plans are. And they give away every single detail about how to foil their plan. The difference here is the context. Devin never came across as egotistical or full of himself. Just a young man who is unafraid to try and is willing to pick himself back up if he falters. One who talks the talk and then walks the walk even better than you thought he would.
As I get older, life is getting more real. I'm learning more about people who are hurting or is mentally ill. Trying to substitute poison with the internal pain they feel. Not even a little bit of hope that they might start to heal. For other people suffering, I want you to know that I've also suffered a great deal. I know you're feeling pain, and I know you're feeling dismantled. You feel you can't trust anyone because your heart was trampled. But I need you to tap into the strength needed to heal yourself. I'm afraid that if you don't fix this problem, you'll kill yourself. I'm informing you about this because I care about your health. You might not have the strength to care anymore at this point, but that's why I'm here to help. You can act like you don't care, but I know you want to be better. You just need more motivation, but that's why we're together. You're not in this alone, and it's not gonna be easy, but all we need is time. Please believe me. I'm trying to help you be great, so I pray that you don't deceive me. I want you to ease your hate and reduce the problems on your plate so that your unconditional happiness can relieve me. Thank you.
Next is Maria. Maria is really good at secrets. So if she has an alter ego, I don't know what it is because she won't tell me. Which is exactly what superheroes are supposed to do. I just hope that she won't be stingy with her superpowers, this vision of clarity and grace that she continues to use her gifts for good, for her good and for ours, because much like the title of her poem, Water, we need it.
Water. What my mom told me to stay away from, what she thought would be the only thing I would drown in, water, what I now see as my escape, my peace and tranquility. My mother never warned me against the fears and doubts I could also drown in. The self-talk, the self-hate talk, and the lack of confidence would be things I would let myself drown in. But it would also be up to me to keep swimming or let myself sink deeper.
Next is Jelani. Jelani is like the young superhero in his origin story who just realizes he has powers and is kind of geeked out about it, but he's also geeked out about all kinds of other things, so he doesn't fully know how powerful he can be. Jelani was always full of energy and often had lots to say in class, sometimes on topic and sometimes not, but whenever I called on him, a perspective that the group had not considered yet was suddenly brought to life. His poem is an example of the unexpected brought to life by his superpower imagination.
Floating out to sea. When I look at this picture, I see a red boat with a periscope on the end of the left. I see water, really white water. I see a knife, a yellow wooden knife. When I look at the pictures, I hear oceans, smooth oceans. I hear pitch black smoke and houses and clear waters. When I look at the pictures, I feel like I'm going away for a long, 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 long time. I feel warm like blood in my body. I feel hot. When I look at this picture, I am a boat. I am captain. I am invincible.
And finally, I'll be reading the work of two students. First is Denzel. Denzel is the Clark Kent that doesn't know he's Superman. Or maybe he's the Hulk that doesn't know about Bruce Banner. Denzel would occasionally get stuck in his thoughts, puzzling over specific details and whether he was allowed to go in a different direction. But once he received permission to just fly wherever his creativity led, his kryptonite faded away. The day this happened is when he wrote this poem. My name is Denzel. My green is dark. My green is special. My green is for grassy flowers covering the dirt like an ocean. My green is for the tracks and footsteps flattening the grass like a lawnmower. My green is dark. My green is for the tear gas and gas masks, for the aftershock of a nuke. My green is for the death by civil war and corruption. My green is dark. My green is for the silence and solution, where grass is still growing if the soil is still rich. My green is for the rise in any situation. And finally, Ella. Ella, unassuming, quiet, raised her hand once or twice, but she's like a living spark. All she needs is fuel to create her fire. And once the burn begins, she is a human firestorm on the page. Her ferocity flies without fear of the burn or the fall. And this is just a small taste of what she's got in her arsenal. First of all, it's being 14 and a survivor. It's fitting into a category and slipping from it at the same time. It's being smacked by a label, being hit so hard it rocks you, and still, with all the force behind it, you break it. It's lying down at night, too afraid to roll on my side or shut my eyes. Inside, my darkness and scars run deeper than just what appears on the outside. It's being able to find the beauty through all the madness, the light at the end of the tunnel. It's being able to speak not only when I'm spoken to. It's finding my voice after being silenced for so long. Thank you.
Thank you, Damon, Tessa, Devin, Maria, Denzel, Jelani, and Ella. Next, we have Wits writer Gary Lilly and his writers Katie J. and Ingrid Schultz of Port Townsend High School.
Both of these young writers are so driven. Images, ideas and music. You know, I mean, it was just great to work at that, at Port Townsend High School with all the students there, but these students just really rocked. I think Katie Johnson is the indestructible girl. Our focus for the Port Townsend High School intensive was witnessing. The what is it that you think affects you and the external world? And also adults, revisions, craft discussions, some killer videos, and we did a performance. She absorbed it, wanted more. I watched her develop this love for writing, and I ask you to please help me welcome Katie D to the microphone.
Hi there, I'm gonna read you Bride Orange Vest. The quiet girl who works hard thinks I'm ugly. She thinks I'm too shiny and too orange, but I help her keep her job and life with my reflectiveness. I am with her when she bags groceries for blank faces, happy faces, drugged out faces, old faces, crippled faces, faces in pain, whiny faces, faces with plastered on smiles like they were made in a toy factory. I am with her when she pushes all those carts like a work mule so the annoying bosses don't give her commands over and over again. I've witnessed the girl coming up to the guardian of the time clock, exhausted and asking for a lunch break when it was a minute away, and having the guardian say, "You need to catch up on carts." Sometimes during her lunch break, we go on adventures, like walking around the swamp where the ducks and homeless people are, eating some crappy Mickey D's when she feels like not spending a lot of money at the cautionary deli. We go through the hustling and bustling boatyard just to go to the beach, or we just chill in the bright, typical, depressing break room where she looks at her iPod to check social media, or she texts the lanky musician she calls her boyfriend. The break room from the outside looks like a tiny window facing the bus depot, but to her, it resembles a cell that stares into the abscess, looking for an adventure, freedom, and meaning in life. From the inside, the break room is just a place where people go to eat or relax from a busy, busy day at work. I help her make money along with my friend, the Black Apron, and that's one reason why she doesn't hate me. When she ain't there, I dangle on the hanger, waiting for another adventure for me, another day of work, another life away from my mundane life as a vest. As I hang here, I wait, hoping she comes again and think about my life as a work vest and how I came to be.
Ingrid Schultz has been writing since she could write. Poems, stories, everything. That was evident in my intensive at Port Townsend High School when it began. She works at it. She really does work at it. Her prose poem, Sands of Time, was in response to a prompt from my teaching partner there, Chris Pearson. I'm going to tell you now, it's great to have a faculty member that's also a writer working with you in a set like this. So I feel blessed with that. He is an English teacher at Port Townsend High School. His prompt was to write something that put you into the row and what that was all about. What is your the row? What does that mean? So I'm going to ask you again to help me welcome these young writers. Welcome Ingrid Schultz.
My poem is called Sands of Time. Waves roll, crash, tumble, and slap against the rocks, leaving them shiny and wet. Then the ocean becomes a rich foam when it finally thins and reaches the fine gray sand. The whoosh of the water brings up a mist of salt spray that temporarily closes my eyes, and I feel the cool mist touch my face while a breath of wind pushes back my hair. A calm washes over me, as if the ocean water has defied gravity and blanketed my whole body, and my lips then turn upward in an ear-to-ear grin, exposing my teeth while I simultaneously take a deep breath of air. The sun is setting over the water. The tangerine oranges and raspberry reds splash over the top of the liquid surface, like a pitcher of juice falling off the table during breakfast and then seeing the sugary spill seep and spread over the floor. I watch it with amazement and begin to realize that the impending darkness of night is starting to swallow the sky. I look up and down the beach and see that the sandy shore has no end or beginning. I don't mind. The long stretch of beach ignores the rules of time and space. No one can ever grow old here. No one can ever get sad. The grains of sand are filled with memories and imprinted with the pounding of footsteps. Then my ears wander to the sound of laughs and giggles from coming up the beach. My family is at the bottom of a bluff sitting on a behemoth-sized piece of driftwood. At this instance, they don't seem to notice me, and that is okay. I breathe in and out, as if I'll never smell the ocean again. I try to get every last bit of the air and always keep it in my memory, the smell of salt, sand, and love. I never want to forget this. Time has stopped. Everything is still. Even my thoughts, I'm at peace. The world has begun to drip together into a beautiful painting. My Walden is here, where time stops.
Thank you, Gary, Katie, and Ingrid. Next, please welcome Witch writer Imani Sims and her writers Haley Krauss of Renaissance School of Art and Reasoning, Keanu Lino of Broadview Thompson K-8 School, Tatum Hadley of Catherine Blaine K-8 School, and Jemiah Barker and Wynn Vo of Cascade Middle School, who will be doing a group poem.
Known for laboring over poetic beauty and inspiring lines, Haley demonstrates vulnerability as she takes on the layered existence of womanhood. She raises the bar for writers as she lays raw emotion on the page. Please put your hands together for Haley Krauss.
Hello. So my poem's called Blue. Okay. Her favorite shade of nail polish is a light blue color called Behind Her Smile. You can slap on some makeup and call yourself beautiful. You can binge and purge and starve yourself and call yourself thin. You can cry yourself to sleep every night and wake up the next morning and say you're fine. You can have 1 million fake friends online and have zero friends in real life and call yourself popular. But when you take off the makeup, when you eat something and stay full, when you are done with the pain, when you disable your Instagram account, what are you now? Just a light blue nail polish called Behind Her Smile.
Yeah. Oh my God, my students, I love them so much. Up next, a quiet and opinionated writer, Kiana takes on the complexity of our current social climate with an epistle poem to national leadership. Rife with open-hearted honesty, the student tugs at the heartstrings of humanity. Please put your hands together for Kiana Lino.
Dear America, one nation under God, it's funny to think of ourselves as one nation under God, yet we still stand divided. Hungry poor Democrats, wealthy Republicans, men and women working the same job but women get paid less, black men being shot down on the streets, crooked white police officers. One nation under God, We should stand together, yet we don't. The smell of red blood filling our nostrils, the sight of it pouring out of bodies, the sound of gunfire raging on. This is what tears us apart. Sticks and stones break our bones, but we will still stand united. How can we stand united yet? But people still feel they need to ask, does my life matter less than his? One nation under God. How can we say we are one nation when our up-and-coming president is a man who makes himself richer and the poor poorer? One nation under God. Let's make this pledge mean something, because as of right now, I don't feel like we are one nation. Sincerely, Kiana Lina.
Transporting us to another world, Tatum uses poetry as a vehicle to discuss the fantastic. In this post-apocalyptic piece, we meet a hybrid character who tells the tale of a gruesome future. Please put your hands together for Tatum.
The darkness devoured every light, space light could not get to. Crackles of fire filled the air with unforgiveness. Ash strangled his snake-like body, suffocating his lungs with each breath, like taps of a fragile gem. He slithered up an aged brick arch, blood dripping from a deep gash underneath his left eye. The blood dripped like tears of disdain. Gash shortened his existing breath by ongoing breath. No shadow, no stars, no waves in the Red Sea. Only black tar hardened on backs of others, each other's. Sharp whistles like a shard of glass. Then a small hint, the last survivor, walking up to him with a bucket of black tar, boiling hot, eating up the last of the last.
Mm-hmm. It is my absolute delight to present these two writers. As my eighth graders endeavored to collaborate and craft group poems, two of my students raised a hand and said, "Can we write a poem comparing zodiac signs?" I secretly squealed on the inside and replied with an emphatic, "Yes!" Jemiah and Nguyen have created a poignant and hilarious comparison poem about the zodiac. Please put your hands together for Jemiah and Nguyen.
This is how zodiac matches foods. Bouncing like jello is the Aries. As expensive as caviar is the Taurus.
Double-sided like a double popsicle is the Gemini.
Uplifting like sparkle water is the Cancer. Easily angry like Julius Hot is the Leo. Harmless like salad is the innocent Virgo. There are many stems of grape like friends of Libra. Strong like watermelon is the Scorpio. Karma apple is sweet like second kind. Determined like coffee is the Capricorn. Cold outside but sweet inside like ice cream is the Aquarius. Nice but easily broken like an egg is the Pisces. Creative signs are Aquarius, Cancer, Gemini, and Virgo.
Freedom-loving signs are Aries, Libra, Pisces, and Sagittarius.
Emotionally strong signs are Capricorn, Leo, Scorpio, and Taurus. This is how zodiac matches food.
Thank you, Imani, Haley, Kiana, Tatum, Jemiah, and Nguyen. Next, we have Wits writer Laura Gamash with her writers Elijah Kaplan and Bela Cohen-Knott of Tops K-8 School. Also from Tops K-8 School is writer Laura Hengst, who Laura will be introducing on behalf of Wits writer Michael Overa.
All right. Elijah Kaplan. First of all, I have to tell you that he was telling me about base 12 a lot before we started, and my head is really quite busy. His current favorite word is philosophy, a nice long word, he says, with a depth of meaning. Elijah throws active verbs into his lines with the verve of a chef tossing seasonings into a pot. In the camp, a sparrow emits a piercing chirp. Trees quiver and rustle. Dirt grates, and the tired narrator shambles. It ends. The log I sit on is strangely lumpy and misshapen. The air mattress has a similar quality. I love the offhanded wit of that last line. He said he doesn't usually use humor, that the line presented itself when he didn't know how to end. He's a writer. Please welcome Elijah.
The camp. The taste of moist pine fills my mouth. The cold, crisp air is magical. It smells like burnt marshmallows, slightly unpleasant, yet strangely comforting. A sparrow emits a piercing chirp, echoing throughout the woods. Chilling winds come by as the trees quiver and rustle. The crickets begin their symphony as the fire crackles. The night sky is a vault full of stars, and tonight it has been fully unlocked. The slow-growing moss is clinging tenaciously to almost every tree in sight. Our campfire is roaring excitedly as bundles of twigs fall in. Mist is rising from the ground and the air becomes wet. The rough, coarse dirt grates against my weary feet as I shamble towards the tent. The log I sit on is strangely lumpy and misshapen. The air mattress has a similar quality.
That's great. Bela Cohen-Knott is currently reading Pride and Prejudice. She keeps the hardback 7-book Jane Austen boxed set with gold-edged pages in her school locker. Her advice to budding writers is, if you have an idea, don't worry if other people won't get it, just write. Her Just Mercy poem started with lists of words made from two other poems. She liked figuring out how I'm going to use mounds in there. Funny, she says, since my dad plays music with a group called Mounds. All Must is composed of 6 precisely honed couplets. Here's Bela to give it to you.
All must. Love binds us together, the rope cinching at every struggle. Everyone works as one to free ourselves, but to no avail, because of our wisdom, we stay together. We are learning the music of fear on the leaves of the book I am reading this from.
And now I will channel Michael Overa to introduce Lola Hengst, who I got to work with when she was a 6th grader last year. Lola recently and somewhat reluctantly confessed to me, Michael, that she started writing this story while I was in the middle of instruction. As many of the writers here can attest, that's far from a bad thing. This story clearly shows not only her enthusiasm for her writing, but also an ability to be at once insightful and humorous. Lola's story, New Kid Problems, is clear proof that, again, like many good writers, she has mined details from her own experience. Welcome, Lola.
Allison took a quick peck to her mother's cheek before slinging her backpack over her shoulder and rushing to the office. The cold weather nipping at her cheeks turning them a bright pink. Every time her feet hit the ground, she heard a thud. She started sprinting towards the office, seeing Miss Jones at her desk. Her hair seemed grayer and her eyes seemed darker. Probably because she has to deal with us kids again, Allison thought to herself. Miss Jones looked up from her computer, eyeing the girl. Allison, she started with a sigh. First day of senior year and you're late. What's your excuse? She asked, taking out a pink notepad. How are you sure I have an excuse? Allison asked in curiosity. Miss Jones looked up from her notepad to give it a look only a teacher could give. I missed my bus, she said. She had lost this battle. Miss Jones gave a disapproving grunt before asking, what's your first class? Economics within stock, she read off her paper. Miss Jones ripped off the pink sheet and handed it to Allison, who gave a small thank you and smile. She traveled the mustard yellow halls, her hands grazing the lockers. She took her phone out to let her mother know that she had gone to her late sleep and was heading to class before colliding with another person and knocking her down. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was looking at my paper and wasn't watching where I was going, Allison heard. A deep voice, possibly male, Allison thought before sitting up, trying to comprehend that not only had she been late to her first day of school, but also that she was going to be even more late for class because of this person. Her eyes met the body of a voice, a boy with honey brown eyes and moles scattering his face. He must have gone somewhere warm for the summer because his skin was tan. The boy cleared his throat, a slight blush on his cheeks as Allison snapped back into reality.
Thanks for streaming this episode of Speakers Forum from KUOW 94.9 Seattle, the 2017 Writers in the Schools Year-End Reading and Celebration took place at the Seattle Public Library's Central Library on May 25th. Thank you again to Sonia Harris for our recording. You can hear the full recording on our website, kuow.org. Tune in again soon.